You're listening to Radio Influence.
Got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he exports the pound. Whoa. And here comes a mission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen,
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC 223 and Bellator 196 took place last weekend, and we are going to recap both those events on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence, along with recapping those cards and talking about the MMA that's going to be taking place this weekend. Going to have three interviews for you. It's going to have three guys going to be fighting on Friday night at Bellator 197. We'll talk to Brandon Gertz, of course, going to be the main event of the fight card, as he is going to be taking on Michael Chandler, what I would pretty much call an interim title fight, even though a title is not on the line. Also, we'll talk to the two men that are going to be in the co-main event, AJ McKee and Justin Lawrence, plus a ton of other stuff to get into. But Daniel, man, we did that little podcast extra last Friday after the craziness of what happened with Conor McGregor. If for anyone who thinks the UFC is not coming to Conor McGregor business, just watch the opening of the UFC 223 pay-per-view. Very clear, they're not getting out of the Conor McGregor business.
Well, it's so hard to talk about this, Jason, because our point, both of us, are in agreement, where the first thing we said is the UFC will remain in the Conor McGregor business. But let's not mistake us saying that for us like defending anything he did. We are just stating like what we think it will be the reality of the situation. The reality is you got a superstar that draws, you put him on pay-per-view, unless he murders someone, maybe. But because that's just how it goes. We don't want to come out here and paint this picture about how Conor's never going to fight again, because we just know it's going to happen. That's kind of the way I think we've tackled it. But I will say we have to really address how horrific what he did was. The more and more I think about it, and I was watching the UFC 223 embedded, which I'm sure they were so thrilled they could put that on YouTube and get 2 million hits. And like just putting yourself in the shoes of any fighter that was on that bus, like – the last thing you want to hear about is the UFC getting back in the Conor McGregor business. So it's a really hard thing to grapple with, because obviously McGregor is going to fight again because he's one of the few people they have that can make them a lot of money on pay-per-view. But at the end of the day, this dude was a straight-up madman and attacked a bus of fighters and injured fighters and terrified fighters and who knows what else he did. So it's really hard, right, to play the role of both disciplinarian as well as realist. And I don't know what else to say other than I don't think we should undersell how screwed up what he did was. What he did was like a criminal offense.
I said this on the MMA Insiders podcast. This is a situation that could have gone a lot worse than what it did. Because what happens if that bus driver opens that door and lets, you know, whoever wants to get out of that bus go attack Conor and his crew? I mean, it could have been a lot worse than what it was. By the way, you haven't checked the updated YouTube stats. That embedded now has 4.3 million views.
Dang, that's crazy, because I literally saw that video like a day after. And for it to explode like that is absolutely insane. For those that hadn't seen the embedded, one of the things I really enjoyed about it that they did show was they had all the champions minus Conor, who I guess is no longer champion, at the New York Stock Exchange. And you saw in real time Daniel Cormier, various champions, react to the news in the videos. And I just thought that was fascinating stuff to see kind of the raw reaction from various UFC luminaries. And also, by God, I want to see Khabib Nurmagomedov find Conor McGregor in an unsanctioned street fight. The one thing this video made me want is to see Nurmagomedov beat the hell out of Conor McGregor. That is definitely – this is basic wrestling 101, where you have a clear babyface and a clear heel.
I mean, look, it has now become a mega fight for the UFC. I mean, if you're Dana White, you're doing whatever you can to make this fight happen. I mean, it's an absolute mega fight. Easily 1 million pay-per-view buys. Who knows? Maybe you can get closer to the 1.5 range. But, you know, look, Conor's got to get his legal situation taken care of before that can happen. Give Khabib all the credit in the world for, basically not caring who was going to step into the cage with him on Saturday night, ready to go.
Can I run one Conor thing by you before we move on from Conor? Just one ahead. Conor thought. I was thinking about this. I always think about things when I'm in the shower or, in the restroom. I spent a lot of time there after eating all those buffalo wings. Do you think we talk about how maybe Conor has become so polarizing that he's even a bigger star and more eyeballs are on there? But do you think all of these controversies he's had over the past 2 years could actually work against him if he loses? In that, I think prior to maybe the last 2 years, Conor could survive a loss and still be a megastar. But you think if Conor McGregor goes out and does actually lose convincingly, he may have actually cost himself in star power in that. Do you think we could be talking about 2 years from now, man, remember when Conor was a star? Because I think the reaction could be to a loss. Wow, that was great. Now let's move on.
No, I don't think so. I mean, here's the crazy thing. I saw this stat. He gained 2 million followers on Twitter after this.
That's insane. How many followers does he have now?
I know I saw on Facebook he's got like over 7 million likes.
But like how I just wonder how what people would think of Conor if he comes in there and Nurmagomedov lays waste to him with wrestling for 5 rounds. I really would be interested in the follow-up in his star power.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a fight that I want to see. I mean, it's just like I want to see Khabib and Tony, but will we ever see that fight?
No, I don't think so, man.
Probably not, but I mean, look, like after seeing the way Khabib fought, and I'll say this, I don't know how you don't score that first round, a 10-8 round. I saw all these people going 10-9, I'm like, what would he have had to done for it to be a 10-8 round? And also the fact of the New York State Athletic Commission's under the new unified rules, so that means also the way judges score fights. I scored the first 2 rounds, both 10-8 rounds for Khabib. I mean, they were total domination.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal effort, especially early on. I agree with you. And I have some questions about the scorecard and the co-main event actually as well, but the main event to me, obviously you had D'Amato and Lee get at least one of the rounds right, and it was or 2 of the rounds right, and it was simply put, Al knew what Nurmagomedov could do, but he probably needed an entire training camp to defend the takedown. And not only that, man, the stand-up of Nurmagomedov continues to impress me, and it really impressed me in his last fight, but obviously that was a big-time effort out of him. But again, it's like this guy, I think maybe I have undersold his stand-up, and I kind of forgot about it until watching him take on Al. And Al did land a couple of nice shots in the 25 minutes that they did fight. But Nurmagomedov is such an elite, stellar wrestler, top-control fighter. And for the most part, when we see those type of fighters, they're almost albatrosses on the feet. But that's not the case. Nurmagomedov has quickly established himself to me as an above-average stand-up fighter. And it's like, geez, it's going to be a tough task for any 155-pounder to come out there and win. This obviously wasn't a finished victory. It wasn't a standout win for Nurmagomedov. It was a clear establishment of dominance. But again, my thought coming away from this fight is I am more in the camp that I think I'm taking Nurmagomedov against literally any opponent you line him up against, even Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, I mean, he is going to be a favorite, I think, for the foreseeable future if someone is able to defeat him. It was fascinating listening to Javier Mendez on the MMA Hour on Monday, where he was talking about, basically how he came up with a game plan on 24 hours notice and noted that, really Al was the toughest test they would face based on who the options were going to be out there. And he said that he told Khabib that one of the things he did not want Khabib doing is getting into a brawl, because that was going to put Al in the best chance to win, and basically saying that if you're up on the feet, it's 1-2. So don't be trying to get in 3 and 4 punch combinations where maybe he can try to catch you. I think that's, as much as we talk about the domination throughout the fight for Khabib, and particularly in the first and second round, you look at rounds 3, 4, and 5, where it was essentially, stand up the entire time. I mean, look, are there deficiencies in Khabib's striking defense? No question. And I think in Javier Mendez, without saying it, they know what they have to improve on. But Khabib is who Khabib is. If Khabib is in a stand up fight with Conor McGregor, he can't fight the way he fought on Saturday night. Or Conor's going to land a left hand that's going to end his night. But that's what makes that fight so fascinating, is what happens if the fight is stands on the feet. But we saw what Chad Mendez was able to do when he got Conor down. And I think the damage would be 100 times worse if Khabib were ever to get that fight to the ground. But ultimately the day is, I just hope as a consumer of MMA that we get to see that fight.
I think we absolutely will, and the question is when we see that fight. And I'm just looking forward to seeing, as cool as it was for Ali Aquinta to get this moment, and I'm glad he did. I'm glad somebody was able to get an opportunity to vie for the lightweight championship. It would have been a bummer had we not been able to see Nurmagomedov fight here tonight. I just cannot wait to see Nurmagomedov take on a top three lightweight in this division. I really cannot wait for a fight against Ferguson, a fight against McGregor, maybe a fight against – well, honestly, those are the two fights I'm looking forward to. I think everything else a lightweight will be interesting, but I think the rest of the guys probably need maybe one more. Holy moly, they are phenomenal. They can walk on water type victory. I think currently looking at the landscape, those are the two matchups that really whet my appetite, because with Nurmagomedov, he has been really – filling up every single hole in his game. And you look at his stand-up, it isn't the greatest in the division, but it isn't far off from some of those top dogs. He is clearly above average. If you lined up every 155-pounder and you just had a straight-up stand-up contest, Nurmagomedov would probably finish higher than one would think. Now, a big ingredient, I think, of his approach is the consistent and constant threat of taking an opponent down. I guess eliminating that would affect it. But what he can do to Conor is what Chad Mendes did and then some. With both the size and skill of his wrestling for Nurmagomedov, he really does have that ability to adapt himself or whoever his opponent is. And I guess the question for Nurmagomedov is a pretty simple one. It's how great is that chin, and can it withstand the left? Because I do think if he does get matched with Conor, it just seems like somehow by some mystical ability, McGregor always puts himself in the position to land at least one left in a fight. And I think Nurmagomedov should be a heavy favorite. He just appears to have his focus just 10,000% better. I guess you can't go higher than 100%. 100% better than Conor. And his skill set is just a matchup nightmare for Conor McGregor.
He's got to learn to get that chin down, though.
That is true. I think he's growing out the beard.
I mean, I know a lot of people were critical about Joe Rogan's commentary, but look, one of the things that Joe says is absolutely true is he's got to get that chin down. When you start taking, you take on a striker like Conor, I think Conor lands, he can knock out anybody with that left hand in that division. We'll see if it happens. You mentioned about the co-main event and the scoring of the card. I had it 48-47 for Rose Namajunas.
Yeah, I don't understand how all three judges had it 49-46, dude. Like, I thought watching this fight, this was super clear cut. This was this was an even fight heading into round 5, and a great fight at that. To me, it was a real simple story of this fight is Namajunas really had Joanna's number slightly in rounds 1 and 2, and almost like she kind of ran out of gas, or hell, maybe she was pacing herself for the 5th round. I don't know what, but what a great end of the round for her with the takedown. But yeah, I thought it was pretty simple watching this contest. And imagine this situation where in round 5, where we all think it's even, Joanna wins convincingly and Namajunas wins the fight. That would have been a travesty, and that's what would have happened according to all three judges. So I just wanted to point that out, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is when you look at the scorecards on MMADecisions.com, they're all over the place. So Chris Lee, the only round he gave Joanna was the third round. Dave Torelli only gave Joanna the fourth round. And Glenn Trowbridge gave Joanna the second round. I think everyone was pretty inconsistent with it, everyone felt that the first and second rounds were Joanna, were Rose. Rounds three and four were for Joanna, and then round five was for Rose. I mean, but you see these scorecards just completely all over the board. Majority of MMA media did have it 48-47 for Rose. I think there was probably pretty early on that fight, Joanna kind of, you know, realized like, oh crap, this girl is, you know, that was not a fluke of what happened in November of last year. So Joanna's got to go a little bit back to the drawing board to figure out what she's going to do. I know people are calling for the immediate trilogy fight. I'm not in that boat. I say do Rose against Jessica Andrade, and I wouldn't be opposed to saying go Joanna and Carolina.
Man, I would really enjoy that fight, but I think, again, are we not pointing towards a direction where Jan Jacek is in a new weight class?
I don't think so, man. I think, wow. You know, everything that you heard was she was walking around really light. Like, I'm hearing like 122 pounds. Is, you know, at least during fight week, that's what she was at. So she was, right low. I mean, obviously I think 125 is eventually where she'd go. I think the biggest thing that I kind of wonder about this is, can the UFC elevate Rose to a fighter that people are going to go out of their way to watch for? Can they make her a main event of a fight card and it sell on pay-per-view? And I think a lot of that has to do with the UFC has to sell the personality of Rose Namajunas.
Yeah, man, it's going to be a tough task, just because it's literally a task that they attempt to do with every single champion. And very few of them, I think, have accomplished that. I think Rose has a potential, given her personality, because I think she has a really awesome personality that has the potential to translate well. I think this was a great fight. I think it's a shame there may not have been more eyeballs on it, just because maybe that Nurmagomedov Ferguson pay-per-view number is a bit higher. But again, I thought this was a great fight. And to me, this was a fight that Joanna looked really good in as well. But this was all about, to me, how great Rose Namajunas looked on the feet. This was consistent. This was for three rounds, and she held close in rounds three and four. So I came away watching this fight thinking Namajunas may hold on to this strap for a very long time. Now, it's hard to say that, because we constantly see championships change hands, and Jessica Andrade is an absolute beast and a bit of a phenom there. But Namajunas, the progression of her talent level and the performance she put on tonight – made me think there is a great possibility she is going to hold on to this championship for multiple title defenses, because watching these two fights she's had with Joanna, who has kind of set the standard for women's MMA for a very long time and was really putting herself in a position to climb up the ranks of greatest female fighters of all time, I don't think Joanna has necessarily lost a whole lot, maybe a tad bit. But to me, this was all about the gains Namajunas has made in her game. And it's going to be interesting to – and I really want to see a different fight now. I'm not for a trilogy. I just want to see Namajunas in the cage against another top-tier strawweight, just to continue to get an idea of what her identity is. But currently, when I look at her identity, it's clearly one of the best stand-up fighters, a strawweight fighter with the grappling game, and most of all, a really great athlete. And a fighter who obviously is game for five rounds. So looking down the lineup at women's strawweight, I think if you ask me the question, which current UFC champions do you think will hold their championship the longest? I would tell you that you have DJ, Cyborg Santos, and Amanda Nunes as my top three picks. And potentially the number four pick I would make is Rose Namajunas.
Yeah, I mean, that's I'm in total agreement with you there.
Is there a potential for a UFC doing Jan Jacek, Kovalevich in Poland?
That would seem to make, from a business sense, would make a ton of sense in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, you want to talk about making fighters stars. I think there are two ways to do it. You can manufacture it by the opponent is like a, you know, a heat magnet where people are drawn to the opponent, maybe like a la Michael Bisping, or you just put them in a great environment. And I think Kovačević looked real nice against Felice Herrig. Kind of weird. That was a split decision win over her. Thought she clearly won rounds one and two, but I think putting Joanna and Kovačević hell in a main event feature on Fight Pass in Poland, I guess you won't have a lot of eyeballs on Fight Pass, but I think that environment would be really cool to see an arena full of awesome hardcore Polish MMA fans getting excited for a women's strawweight main event. So that's what I would go towards. I like that matchup you put out there.
Yeah. By the way, I don't think anyone had Zabit Magomed Sharipov and Kyle Bochniak as the fight of the night, but you know, there's these rare instances where a fighter loses and he gains more fans, and boy, Kyle Bochniak, he may have just put the blueprint out there of how you take on Magomed Sharipov.
Well, first you got to make sure he has a broken hand into the fight. I think that had played a little bit of a role.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
but I don't want to sell Kyle short, because by God, did he have a game plan, and by God, is this a crazy man. I loved sticking his tongue out, so aggressive. And look, man, this guy knew the reality of the situation. He was coming up against just a hotshot featherweight prospect. You know, everybody thinks this guy's going to, you know, he's the next big thing, and he may in fact be. He looked dangerous, and he's got vicious kicks. He's got vicious knees and was able to win this decision. But I think Bochniak really showed what you got to do when you're a massive underdog. And what you got to do is get all your chips and put them in the middle of the table and take high risk and really be incredibly aggressive and understand the context of you may in fact be in the cage with a better fighter than you. But if you fight differently, if you fight aggressive, if you fight maybe differently than your opponent expects, you put yourself in a position to land shots. And while he didn't put himself in a position to actually win this fight, despite having some awesome exchanges, he did put himself in a position to be a whole hell of a lot richer, and he did that winning fight of the night. I did not expect this, Jason. I thought this was going to be one of those first-round dominant wins for Magomed Sharipov. I still think Magomed Sharipov is a great fighter, but this was an awesome performance for Bochniak despite losing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he definitely made some fans in the UFC. I want to give some kudos to Joe Lozon's corner for stopping that fight after the second round. It's something we don't see in MMA very often, but when it does, you got to give kudos for the corner protecting their fighter.
Yeah, man. We have to give kudos, because how often do we come on this podcast and criticize their corner for not stepping in and throwing the towel? And I'm glad that happened. Obviously, the doctor chucking on Joe Lozon after Kritz Grussmacher just destroyed him in round two. Just a phenomenal round on a Kritz Grussmacher. Not something I expected. Lozon, man, it's just a pretty similar fight history out of him for the past 3 to 4 years, where he looks either solid or good, or I guess here he's a little below average in that first round. That was a Grussmacher round, but man, round two came and he just looked real flat, and Grussmacher took advantage. And we constantly chastise corners for not protecting their fighters. Lozon's corner made the right call, and kudos. They should have got some. The performance of the night bonus should have also gone to Joe Lozon's corner for doing something we literally never see.
Yeah, I mean, just awesome to see that out of his corner. You know, also to mention Renato Moncano getting the win over Calvin Kattar. Four of the five fights on the main card end up going to a decision. We mentioned about Carolina Kovačević getting the win over Felice Herrig. Olivier Aubin-Mercier, man, what a stoppage by him. Getting the TKO in there in the first round. The only first round finish of the fight card. Also, Ashley Evans Smith gets to win over Beck Rollins. Devin Clark gets to win over Mike Rodriguez. I'll say this in terms of the UFC, and I'll kind of leave this as my final note in this card. For Mike Rodriguez's next fight, put him up against a guy who can strike, not someone who's going to wrestle him.
Yeah, that was a really boring fight. I mean, he looked okay with the striking exchanges, but Devin Clark is going to grind you out. And yeah, that was not fun at light heavyweight. My final note, you mentioned it, Oliver Aubin-Mercier was like a diamond on this prelim card. He really stuck out with his personality, calling himself a Canadian gangster. I saw that the tweet he had, or maybe it was Ariel Helwani that had it. I don't know, some random picture. He has a dope mustache in the picture. I thought Alvin Mercier, Jesus, just clinched on him against the cage, rained down a couple of powerful knees, some punches, and another knee to the body, got that 53-second victory. This fight card would have moved on a lot faster. We had a few more first-round finishes. We had a nine-fight card, and I was really hoping for a quick one. We didn't necessarily get that, but man, Oliver Aubin Mercier is a fighter to obviously keep your eye on because he is really good and proven a lot. And also, he shows quite a bit of personality outside the cage.
Yeah, yeah. So that is UFC 223. Of course, we've got a UFC event coming up this weekend. UFC on Fox 29. Gaethje Poirier. That's the number one reason you should tune into that fight card. That should be a great fight. Condor Oliveira should be a great fight as well in that fight card. What else are you looking forward to on Saturday's card?
Well, I think that entire main card's real interesting. I really wish it was a four-fight Fox card and then the prelims were on FS1. I just think having back-to-back broadcast really devalues the main card. And But in terms of what I'm looking forward to, other than the top two fights, which again, I think we both agree, those look like barn burners. I really enjoy watching Michelle Waterson fight, and this is a nice opportunity against Courtney Casey, who's coming off that loss to Felice Herrig. The fighter I'm really looking forward to seeing perform is also on the main card. Israel Adesanya looked pretty awesome in his UFC debut. Just obviously a fighter with a great kickboxing background going up against Marvin Vettori. So Adesanya is a fighter I'm really looking forward to see fight, as well as Antonio Carlos Jr. going up against Tim Bosch. This is a weird one, but a fight that I'm looking forward to, and I don't know why, just, and I may be the only one that is looking forward to this fight, but Yushin Okami and Diego Lima. It's just a really weird fight with two names that I've followed for a long time, obviously Okami a lot longer than Lima. This probably won't be a good fight, and I have a feeling it's going to come down to grappling versus striking, but I'm going to really seek this one out and look forward to watching. I don't know why. To me, this is a close one too, and I'm going to go with Yushin Okami to win this fight, but man, anytime you got a World Series of Fighting main event on your prelims, you know it's a good card.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that one.
What are you looking forward to, man?
You know what? I'm kind of the Wilson Hayes John Moraga fight on the Fox prelims. You know, we both those guys kind of at a weird point. Also, Ricky Rainey, a guy that I've been following his career for a while. He's now in the UFC, no longer in Bellator. Those would be two fights that kind of stick out to me. And I guess the other one would be Jocko and Tavares. Can Tavares go out and get a stoppage victory if he does get the win? Because the last time he got a stoppage victory, you got to go all the way back to 2011.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Phil Baroni.
Against Phil Baroni. Oh, my God. Yeah, and wow. Yeah, I kind of wondered why Brad Tavares was the opener on the prelims against Jocko, because, like, this guy's won three of his last four. And I guess we answered the question. To answer your question, Jason – I'm going to bet I'm going to bet the decision here. I think it's going to go the distance. Jocko's pretty tough, and I don't think Tavares is going to put him away. I tell you what, do you have your picks for the main card?
I've not made my picks yet, but I like Gaethje in the main event. I think it's kind of tough to trust Poirier in that spot. I want to say Carlos Condit over Alex Oliveira, but I do have a little bit of questions there. And Sonya, I think you have to go that route. And Waterson and Casey, probably Waterson.
Yeah, I have a weird feeling that the smart pick is Casey here, but I'm also going to go with Waterson. I think Sonya is the clear pick, and the one pick where I feel the best about it on the main card. I like Alex Oliveira, and I really would like to see Carlos Condit win. I'm a big fan of Carlos Condit, going back to his run in WEC. He just has I think he just has a phenomenal attitude about the fight game, and he's such a fun fighter to watch fight. He really did not look great in his last performance, and I think Oliveira will take advantage of that and get a really big win for his career. And the main event, I go back and forth because I think that's what happens. It will go back and forth. I think both guys will get rocked, and I think the last guy to get rocked can be Poirier. I think Justin Gaethje wins this fight. But I think no matter who you pick as you watch this fight, you're going to be on the edge of your seat, because the one thing Justin Gaethje and Poirier do is they provide the action and they provide the drama. And I just think this is just a phenomenal main event. I cannot wait for this main event. This is one of the top fights that they've had booked on deck, and I just cannot wait. I cannot wait for this main event. I can't wait for next fight card's main event with Barboza and Lee. They are really killing it with the main events on these fight night cards.
I'll tell you, I did find it interesting, speaking of that Barboza and Lee card, I was watching Ali Abdelaziz's appearance on the MMA Hour on Monday, and he noted that he tried to get Frankie to not take that fight in 2 weeks, but it was Frankie wanted to take the fight. So I thought it was interesting.
That's really weird that he said that.
It's great to hear a manager after his fire, suffers a knockout, say, hey, man, I don't want you getting back in there that quickly, but.
But I mean, if you're a manager, shouldn't you be able to convince your fighter not to fight? Right? Like, shouldn't you have this relationship with
your
fighter?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day,
I don't know, man.
Fighter fights and manager manages. I mean, and so I just hope that, we're not sitting here in a couple weeks kind of talking about why Frankie Edgar should not have fought that fight, but we'll see.
They really are nailing these main cards, man. Like, seriously, look at this list. It's a pretty decent formula. Cowboy Edwards, Rivera Moraes, Thompson Till, Ponzinibbio Usman, Barboza Lee, and obviously Poirier Gaethje. Like, they are just looking at by the night main event.
You are looking way too ahead. Don't you know what happens in this sport?
Yeah, two of those fights are going to happen, I understand.
I mean, come on.
Edgar's going to fight in all of them.
Over on Bellator last weekend, it was Bellator 196. Benson Henderson looked amazing. Now, how much of that is about, the opponent as opposed to him? I don't know. I did find it very interesting. He weighed in at 153 pounds, but man, Benson looked amazing against Roger Huerta. Ed Ruth, decision win. He had a little adversity there in the third round, had to get out of a guillotine choke. Adam Borax, I mean, he steals the show with that flying knee knockout. God damn, if you've not seen that knockout, it's over on the MMAreport.com right now. I mean, just an amazing knockout. But, as much as, I guess the narrative should be about Benson Henderson, I don't know what's going on with Bellator and their television ratings, man. Another show of under 500,000 viewers. And I remember last week I was on their YouTube channel, and I didn't see a lot of videos related to Bellator 196, which I don't know how much that plays into, but maybe that says something about the lack of interest for that card.
Well, I think you're right. I wonder how many videos they had, Jason, but.
It could not have been more than four.
Wow, that's crazy, because your whole priority is promoting your offense. But look, there's a reason why when you ran down this card, you only talked about three fights. And really, you probably would have only talked about Henderson and Roof had Adam Brits not had a dope flying knee knockout, because, I mean, that fight was all about James Gallagher before he pulled out and Teodoro Nicolau, came in. I mean, they're just putting on fight cards that – your hardcore fans won't get excited about. And when your hardcore fans won't get excited by your main card, how can you be shocked if your ratings are bad? And also you're doing it on tape delay as well. So it's just they put on a really bad fight card. They've done a lot of bad fight cards. And the common trend is these tend to be the ones that are international fight cards. And they tend to be on tape delay. And it just to beat a dead horse in the ground, I'll repeat it once again, Jason. Every single time they do a Bellator show, whatever you put on is an indictment of your product. And once you put on fight cards that people deem they can miss, they begin to start skipping more and more, and that breaks the habit of watching every fight card that they do. Obviously, UFC has that problem, but Bellator really went on national TV and they put on a very poor product. And the worst part about it is when you do have fighters pull out, you end up having really weak fights. And that's what we had in the main event and co-main event. This was a great performance out of Benson Henderson, for sure. But this was a mismatch, a major, major mismatch, I think. I think Benson Henderson did look great. Maybe the approach is you match him up with Phil Baroni next. But I will say, more than just the opponent, I think the Roger Huerta I hope to gosh he somehow rebounds and puts together, because I really like him as well. I think Benson Henderson getting matched up with a weak opponent was a nice thing for him mentally, because I think the biggest issue for his game has been he was always been way too cautious. He has not allowed his skills to manifest themselves and put him in a position to win these fights. And here he was very aggressive. He really sought out Huerta, looked solid in that first round, and grabbed the guillotine choke. So hopefully he reacts, and he now mentally moving forward will become a more aggressive fighter, because he has a whole lot of talent. But at times he has let his opponent come to him, which has let his opponents win those fights and control them.
Yeah, it's but I'll say this: I like Friday's Bellator card. You look at the preliminary card for the most part is a Shamrock FC card. That's what it is. That's who they work with there in the St. Louis area. But when you look at those fights that are going to be a part of the main card, Chandler Gertz, McKee Lawrence, Ferguson Jr. against Brock, and Storley against Buckley, I like that matchup. I'll say this about Bellator, and really watching that fight card last week, man, I really like John McCarthy as a color commentator.
Yeah, I think the one great thing John McCarthy has – well, he has two great things. One, I think he has a really good self-awareness of how to broadcast, which is really hard to teach. But two, there are very few resources in this sport better than John McCarthy. I mean, this guy literally wrote the rules for the sport. So, I mean, duh. But he's been in there for so many big moments, and he is very much an MMA historian. And if you're going to do any documentary about any figure in MMA, you're going to have John McCarthy on the list of people you want to interview. So when you have a guy who has the knowledge of John McCarthy, Jason, and you combine it with some of the broadcasting chops he already has shown, and I guess maybe he had some experience. I think he was on that Spike TV show they did a long time ago. What was it, MMA Uncensored or something?
He's done announcing before. He wasn't on, I'm pretty sure he wasn't on that show. But
he wasn't on that show.
He's one of those guys I feel like you learn a little bit something out of him, and it's just enjoyable to watch him. But when you look at this event on Friday night, Storley and Buckley is two 170-pound prospects. McKee and Lawrence is a very good matchup there at 145 pounds. When it comes to the prelims, the Dominic Mazzotta, Josh Sampo fight sticks out to me. Zach Bucha, Derek Anderson is another one. Jordan Howard, a bantamweight prospect. You know, those are some names that stick out to me. But really, it is all about the main event of Michael Chandler and Brandon Gertz. Of course, unfortunately, this was supposed to be a title fight, but Brent Primus pulls out of the fight due to an injury. And when I think about that main event, I think it's going to be action packed. I think you're going to see two guys, that are just going to go in there and they're just going to stand toe to toe. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Michael, how much he mixes up his game here. But in terms of, the best fights of the weekend, I put Chandler and Gertz in there, and I would put McKee and Lawrence in there as well.
Yeah, just to go back to MMA Uncensored, I got John McCarthy mixed up with Nate Quarry, which I guess if you're drunk enough, they look the same. But back to this fight card, this is a two-fight fight card with a really interesting guy, a really interesting fight after that in Storley Buckley. Like, I'm intrigued by that. I think it needs a fourth fight. That would make it awesome. Baby Slice, I don't care about this fight, man. I don't care about Baby Slice. But I do care about Storley Buckley, and I think that's a good one. But to me, it's like a two-fight card in terms of I need to watch this live. I need to watch AJ McKee, Justin Lawrence live. I need to watch Michael Chandler live every time he fights. And that is awesome for Bellator, because it's been a decent amount of time since we've seen that out of them. And I just hope every fight card's like that. Obviously, that's not the case when we kind of look ahead in the schedule. But focusing on this weekend, man, I cannot wait for McKee and Lawrence to fight, because – Justin Lawrence is going to hell with AJ McKee. I think it's going to be a difficult problem to take on, but it's a very interesting fight that I think will also be entertaining. And Chandler and Gertz, if nothing else, is entertaining. Got a nice win after quite a few losses in a row. And I do think this one won't go too far, though. I think Michael Chandler is just on a bit of a different tier than Brandon Gertz, and this will end up being a nice performance out of Michael Chandler that may end early. But obviously, if this fight does go long, we are talking about a fight that could be one of the best fights of the weekend. So this is a week where you have Bellator and UFC, and I think if you were, like you said, listing maybe the top five fights of the weekend, you could make a case that Bellator has two of those top five, which is a nice little tip of the cap and what I kind of want to see out of Bellator moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, a nice fight card on Friday night on the Paramount Network. But right now, I'm going to let you hear three interviews that I conducted last week. Your first one, you're going to hear Brian Gertz. Then you're going to hear from AJ McKee. And then the third interview will be with Justin Lawrence. Brandon, I appreciate the time. When you get the phone call and, you know, the offer comes in, was it an immediate hell yes, let's do this? Or did you kind of make a courtesy phone call to your coaches to let them know, hey guys, FYI, I'm taking a short notice fight?
I mean, pretty much. I didn't say yes yet because I have to ask my coaches. But when I saw it, I was like, I already knew in my mind we were taking it. You know, and I just told them, I said yes. You know, I want this fight. I just got to ask or basically tell my coach, you know, we fighting, you know, and that's pretty much how it went down. It was an opportunity, you know, I would never turn down.
You know, we talked after your last fight, you know, you got back to the winning side of the fight. I mean, is this almost like a dream scenario for you? I mean, because you look at this fight, I mean, and you could make the case as an interim title fight, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, if I look at the 155-pound roster, there's nobody else I'd want to fight over Chandler. That's the fight, you know. That's the fight I would want. That's the fight I've looked at since I've been with Bellator. So it's definitely a dream fight for me.
I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, this is a guy that you've been thinking about fighting for a long time. I mean, in the back of your mind, have you really been preparing for Michael for multiple years?
Absolutely, you know, and it's like I said, since I joined Bellator, I looked at Michael Chandler as someone I was going to fight. He was at the top, you know, and that was where I was going, you know. So I've always looked at, you know, I wouldn't say I prepared for him, you know, honestly, to tell you the truth, until I got the fight and signed the fight. I haven't even watched Chandler's fights other than the ones I caught, you know, as they happened. I don't, you know, I didn't look into him. I don't look into people until I fight them, you know. I just know that he was a tough dude and he's somebody I was going to be fighting at some point, you know, and I believe I would have fought him by now. It's a little crazy I have not, but the opportunity is here now and I'm going to take full advantage of it.
What is the advantages for, in your mind, of taking a short notice fight?
The advantages is you don't get a lot of time to sit there and overthink it. Really, as fighters, you know, people think that, you know, we're just out there and we just go out and we fight and it's whatever, but a lot of part about fighting is mental, you know, and when you have a long camp, sometimes it can be grueling and, you know, you overthink some areas, and that I think is the biggest plus I have. There's been no time to think, there's been no time to overthink. It's all it's been is, you know, go time, preparing for Michael Chandler. I haven't thought about the fight too. I haven't thought about, you know, the what ifs or the anything of this fight. There hasn't been any. There's no time for that. All there's time for is get ready, go, let's kill him.
You train there in Colorado. You know, we've talked about, you know, being there and training there. You know, obviously Justin Gaethje's got a fight that weekend as well. So how does that affect kind of the coaching during fight week?
It's been the same, you know. Trevor Whitman works with Gaethje, and my coach Jake Ramos is my head coach. So nothing much changes there. And me and Gaethje, you know, we feed off of each other and we, you know, train with each other. So it's great. This is, I swear, we've had almost the last three fights, we've been close to each other, and it's great because we're both in camp. We're both going hard. We both have the intensity and the mentality that we're about to step into battle, and it's a great way to feed off of each other.
Would you say that he is almost the ideal training partner for facing Michael Chandler because of his wrestling and also with liking to stand up?
Gaethje's not the ideal training partner to face anybody. There's nobody like him. He's a damn Terminator in there, you know, and in every training session's the same thing. I crack him hard and he keeps freaking walking forward, you know, and we brawl. That's it. It's, I wouldn't say he's the way he's a great training partner is because he keeps my intensity up. He keeps my drive going, all that stuff. He doesn't let me take a break. Every time me and him face each other, we're in war. You know, every time we spar each other, me and Gaethje battle. And I love it because it gets my intensity level up and it prepares me and it tells me no one's going to be like this. I've been fighting for damn near 10 years now, and I've had plenty of training partners. I've gone with plenty of killers and, you know, that can strike and hit hard and wrestle and do stuff. But he's a different animal in that area. It doesn't matter what you do to the guy. He will come at you the same as he did from the beginning of the round to the end of the round. He's coming forward, and I admire that, and I love that. And he's taught me to just go out there and let it go, and don't leave anything left. You know, leave it all there out in the cage.
You're going into Michael's backyard here. I mean, yeah, he trains down in Florida, has a place in Tennessee, but he's from Missouri. People know him in Missouri. You know, and I think probably outside looking in, people would say, hey, man, you got to love this because, you know, look, you don't have any worries about various things. Do you kind of, does that motivate you knowing of everyone that's going to be in that arena on fight night is absolutely going to hate you?
I love it. All the pressure's on his shoulder. None of it's on mine. And it doesn't even matter that I feed off of that. I was just telling somebody else that I love that energy. I love them yelling at me. I love people getting in my face or whatever it is. It's hostile territory. I feed off of that. It will get me jacked up. It'll get me ready to kill somebody because that's what I am. I'm a fighter, and you have people coming at you. There's no way you can't get fired up. And I've been in a couple scenarios where I went to other people's hometowns and I loved it. I would rather that than fight in my own hometown. Your own hometown, you got millions of people hitting you up, millions of people telling you they're going to be at the fight, you know, all this stuff. Or what are you going to do after? Let's meet. You know, there's a lot of distractions. You know, he's got it all on his shoulders. I just got to come there and whoop ass. He's got to go there and he's got to entertain 400 some freaking family and friends.
What do you see as your biggest key to victory in this matchup?
My biggest key is, you know, is my intensity in that I don't shy from a firefight. You know, that's my key here. And I believe he likes to get in firefights and he likes to throw heavy and he likes to be a bully out there. I love that stuff. I love somebody that comes to me and fights. You know, I don't got to chase. I'm not going to be chasing Chandler down in that cage. You know, we're going to meet and we're going to meet in the middle and we're going to both freaking go forward and somebody's going to give. Something's going to give. I absolutely love that. This is two bulls in the cage, you know, and something's going to give. Neither one of us are backing down. And that's what I love. I think the fans are going to get what they paid for.
And of course, this is the main event of Bellator 197 Co. on Friday night, April the 13th. Of course, live on the Paramount Network starting at 9 p.m. Eastern time. I have to imagine that Bellator has basically told you, hey, you win this matchup, you're getting premise for the title?
You know, there hasn't been exact words because they're not, they don't try to put themselves in a position where they have to do something. And I haven't even asked. To tell you the truth, I never even said if I beat him, I get a title, right? Like, those words never came out of my mouth. I don't actually care. Not that I don't care about getting a title shot. I absolutely want that title shot. But right now, I'm focused on whooping Michael Chandler. If I don't whoop Michael Chandler, nothing can happen after that. So my main focus, I haven't demanded nothing. I haven't asked for nothing different. I just want to go in there and I want to perform against Chandler. And everything else will work itself out.
And, of course, we all look forward to seeing this matchup, Bellator 197 on April 13th, live on the Paramount Network. Brandon, man, as always, I appreciate time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Just you can check me out at Brandon Gertz MMA on all my social media.
AJ, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Doing very good. Before we get to this fight, one of the things I've been talking to fighters about is their very first pro fight, you know, for you, that was back in 2015. What do you remember about that night?
Honestly, not much. I remember I had a darce choke. I let go of the darce because I finished my last amateur fight with a darce choke. So I didn't want to finish it with the same thing. And, I ended up pulling off a rear naked right after that. And, yeah, that was all she wrote. And then I remember my dad getting mad at me, telling me, hey, you ever let go of a rear naked choke or a submission again, you and I are going to fight after the fight. So since then, if I get a submission, I finish it.
Where does Darce choke rank up there in your favorite submission techniques to go for? Or is it just one of those things of, I just go for whatever I see is open?
Yeah, I go for whatever's there, man. If there's an opening, I'm taking it. It doesn't matter where it's at or what you leave open. If I see it, I'm going to take it.
It's been about 6 months since we saw you in the Bellator cage. Have you made any tweaks in terms of what you're doing to prepare for this matchup?
Yeah, I'm training this fight. Justin Lawrence isn't an opponent you can go out there and slack on, you know, and take days off or train 3 weeks to fight. So this fight, you know, everyone's talked about who have I fought. I haven't fought this person. I haven't fought that person. Or I haven't fought a person with any name. So Justin Lawrence is a name. He's someone that I feel I can't slack against, or I'm pretty sure anyone else feels that I can't slack against as well. So just really training and putting in a full 8 week camp and being prepared is phenomenal. You know, I feel great. I haven't really taken a fight over 50% being ready. And when I did that, it was against Mazzotto, and that ended with a head kick. So really, really being ready for this fight and just 100% is it's phenomenal. You know, I'm excited. I'm ready. And I just can't wait to get in there and see what I'm going to do.
When people say, oh, AJ hasn't fought the tough competition, does that get to you? Does that piss you off? Because there has been times where you've been scheduled to fight Henry Corrales. You've been scheduled to fight Emmanuel Sanchez, but ultimately those guys didn't make it the fight night.
Not really, because that's not my fault, you know? That's on them. For me, I take it as a compliment, you know? I take it as exactly the way I see it and exactly what it is. They want me to fight guys that are at my caliber, that are at just as, not just as good as me, because they're not, but they're at my level, you know? The top tier guys, that's the level of competition that I'm at. So Justin Lawrence being one of those people, nothing against him. He's a great fighter, but I'm going to make an example out of his ass, you know, just to show them I don't care who it is. It doesn't matter if it's Emmanuel Sanchez, Henry Corrales, Pitbull, any of these guys. It doesn't matter. I'm ready to fight whenever. I don't pull out a fight. When I sign that dotted line, I show up to fight. I'm not a Princess Gallagher. I'll fight with my hand fractured if it's broke. I've fought with a fractured hand before. I sign that dotted line, I'm showing up to fight, point blank, period.
I've noticed on your Instagram, you've been using the hashtag Young Goat. Is that the biggest motivation for you right now?
Definitely. Floyd is an undefeated fighter. He's the GOAT, the greatest of all time in boxing. His record is stunning, unblemished, and that's part of my motivation of my career is to be the Floyd of MMA, which is a 10 times better accomplishment to me. Why? Because there's 30 different things I have to worry about that he doesn't have to worry about. There's kicks, there's elbows, there's knees, there's submissions. There's so many different aspects and angles of MMA that anything can happen. You can get caught at any given time, any given point. So for me to stay undefeated is that's just one of my goals, you know, besides becoming champ. So doing that and staying undefeated is a great achievement for me.
What is the most difficult thing about being an MMA fighter? Is it just the pure day in and day out grind?
Yeah, man, just grinding. It gets old, it gets tiring, and you want to give up sometimes, you know? You want to do something new, but you can't. Why are you going to give up? Why are you going to break, you know? This is what I want to do. I don't want to work a normal 9-to-5 job. It's not something I'm made up for, you know? I'm not going to wake up on time. I'm not going to want to take orders from someone else. I like to be my own boss. I like to do what I want to do. When I wake up and I'm like, okay, it's after the fight. I don't want to go to the practice today. I'm first week back after the fight. Okay, cool. I can take my Banshee and go riding if I want. I can go to the racetrack. I can go work on cars. I can do the normal things that I want to do. So being your own boss is very much motivation for me and not having to say yes to anybody. You know, you're your own boss, you make your own rules, you can do what you want. And that's kind of where my dad comes into play. You know, he'll let me slip and fall. If I'm not training, he's not going to be like, you have to train. He's going to let me learn the hard way, like, hey, you don't want to train? All right, cool. Go do what you want to do. And that's kind of where my last fight came into play. I only trained 3 weeks for the fight. I couldn't really hit mitts, couldn't do anything because of my hands. So I'm just out here playing around, messing around at the car shop, working on cars, and just doing things I shouldn't be doing in the last month of a camp. And it showed, you know. I'm not the type of person to get tired. I can go and push the pace and break people. And that second round, I was tired, you know. I sat on that stool and I was like, man, this isn't a good feeling. And just knowing that and having to dig deep to a different source of drive that most people, even if they reach it, they don't know what to do with it and they don't know how to handle it. They just kind of fold. So being able to dig deep and come out with that win and really fight through that tiredness and that breaking point was a great learning point. And it was a great, I'd say, just learning experience of growth.
Biggest learning experience you've had in this game?
Definitely, man. Definitely. You can't take main event fights and not train. It doesn't work out well.
You know, you mentioned about James Gallagher, and that is something that, you know, a fight that a lot of fans have been talking about. What do you think the chances are that fight happens in 2018?
It needs to happen within the next fight or two, because if it doesn't, I'm going for that belt. And once I go for that belt, I'm not paying attention to little kids anymore. You know, that's the same thing with my career of why I'm messing around. I'm playing around. I'm not really training. I know I'm ahead of these guys. I'm ahead of the game. I'm on a different level. So now that I'm fighting someone that's in the top tier rankings of the weight class, I'm training. I'm putting in all the work that I need to and taking myself to another level that I know I'm capable of being at. So for that fight to happen, hey, I'm ready whenever, you know. He just pulled out of a fight and now he's saying he wants to fight me. Okay, well, 4 months ago you weren't ready to fight. Then you pull out of a fight a week before the fight and now you're ready to fight 2 weeks after you pulled out. Are you ready or not, bro? If you're ready, then why aren't you fighting this week? You're calling me out saying you're ready. But whatever, dude. I'm going to go whoop Justin Lawrence's ass, and then I'll whoop his ass right after. It really doesn't matter to me. I can coach my dad and then go whoop his ass. We can do that father-son fight the same night. I'll coach my dad. My dad will coach me.
How do you see the victory against Justin Lawrence coming?
First round is going to be a good round, very fast pace. Second round, I'm going to push the pace, and I feel I'm going to break him in the second round, break him on the feet.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see this come on Friday night, April 13th, Bellator 197, co-main event of the Fight Card, of course, live on the Paramount Network. AJ, as always, I appreciate time and look forward to seeing your fight.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Justin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Jason. How are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing very good, man. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to talk to me. Obviously, a big matchup here in the co-main event. But, you know, I was looking at where you are originally from in Missouri and realized how close it is to St. Charles, Missouri. So how many friends and family are you expecting to be in attendance on Friday night?
Oh, man. I got the whole state coming to watch me, brother, man. It feels so good to be back in, you know, fighting in St. Louis. Bellator actually hasn't been back to St. Louis in a year or so now, 2 years maybe going on. I'm not exactly sure on the time frame, but it's been a while. But I'm very excited to be coming back to St. Louis and putting on a great fight and bringing the fans a great fight with AJ McKee. So it's going to be exciting and it's going to be awesome to hear that crowd roar when I come out.
You know, some guys will talk about the pros and the negatives of fighting so close to your home. But is it one of those things for you? It you feed off it?
Oh, man, yeah, you have to. I mean, why not? I mean, would you rather be fighting in foreign territory? Or would you rather be fighting at home? I'd rather be fighting at home. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way I think. I care about my fans. You know, I want to give my fans everything. If it wasn't for the fans, I wouldn't be doing this sport. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, I just want to go on there and just let the hands fly like I always do and come out victorious and just please the crowd, man, and just let them have the night and let them feel the night like I'm feeling.
If you, feel. If you were not a fighter, what do you think you'd be doing right now?
Oh, man, that's a good question, man. That's a great question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. You know, my dad owns a gym. He's owned a gym since 93. So ever since I was like 3 years old, he's owned a gym. So I feel like I would have always been involved with a gym. My dad told me, he said, son, you don't have to fight, but you're always going to train. So I said, shit, I might as well fight. I just feel like my dad owns a gym in Pacific, Missouri, which is, you know, about 30 miles from St. Charles, 20 miles from St. Charles. Like he said, it's right up the street. I feel like I will be, I would be in the gym somewhere, teaching somewhere, or a firefighter. That's kind of always been my thing. I'm trying to lock that in now. Go firefighting school eventually here, maybe end of this year. Just trying to knock some stuff out, you know. Because fighting, you can't fight forever. It's definitely a young man's sport. And, I'm just trying to set up things for after fighting.
Man, you're not that old, Justin. Come on. You're only 27.
No, I'm not. You're right. But but at the same time, man, I've been in this sport since I was 7 years old. You know what I mean? And I'm kind of not ready for the next chapter yet, but I think in time I will be. And, I want to raise a family. Right now I don't have any kids just because, you know, I got to be pretty selfish for myself. I want that next chapter eventually. And, I just feel like, doing what I can and right now in these next 3 to 5 years is, you know, getting those big fights, getting those big wins, and just keep growing, as a fighter right now. And I feel like that will set me up better, near the end of my career. And at the end of the day, man, you got to be mean. You got to be hungry constantly for this sport. And I want to be a soft dad eventually. You know, I want to live through my kids a little bit, as I grow older, you know.
Because of your upbringing with your, you know, father being in the gym business, have you ever felt like fighting is a job to you?
You know, I mean, that's a good question. Yeah, yes and no. I mean, there's, you know, it's like with anything. I mean, there's a lot of times that I love going to the gym, but there's some days that I'm just like, man, I just don't want to be here right now. You know, you wake up sometimes, you know. But I tell you what, when I leave the gym and I'm at that stop sign or stop light and I look over and I see a concrete truck pouring concrete, you know, I could tell myself I could be doing that. You know what I'm saying? So I don't got it so bad. You know what I'm saying? So, and I've literally worked for this my entire life to be a full-time fighter, not necessarily have a part-time job and this and that, you know, really trying to get all my funds in order so I could be doing this, all, you know, just, you know, by myself and not have any other income having to support me, you know, and really getting the right money for my fights and making sure I have that good management, making sure I have a right team around me. Yeah, man, I really feel like that's important, you know.
With this being your seventh fight in Bellator, how would you describe your run in the promotion to this point?
Good. It could be better. You know, I dropped a split decision loss to Emmanuel Sanchez that I personally thought I won. You know, I lost a fight to John Maka, which was super tough. I took that fight on 4 weeks notice when Pat Curran pulled out. I slid in there, and nobody was asking that for that guy. I mean, he was 20-1 at the time. You know, he had a lot of fights, Brazilian, tough. And I stepped on a 3.5-4 weeks notice. No problem. Sign me up. You know, I came off a nasty knockout over Kobayashi, and I was feeling good. I had a lot of momentum, you know, but, you know, I came up a little short on that one as well. You know, those are two fights that I kind of dropped. But every other fight I look spectacular in, you know. And I'm really hunting down Emmanuel Sanchez, not trying to look past an AJ McKee at all, because AJ is a tough task. But I definitely want that fight back with Emmanuel Sanchez.
I had a chance to talk to AJ, and one of the takeaways I really had from it was he mentioned he's expecting this to be a high-paced fight. You think that's a great way to sum up what fans can expect in this matchup?
Oh, yeah. Yep, 100%. I definitely want to be in his face, you know, trying to break him, because I do feel like he sets the tone in all of his fights and sets the rhythm that he wants to set. And it's my job to set the pace higher than his. You know, you gotta keep up with me, not keep me up with him. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when I feel like a lot of people don't respect him being a southpaw, you know what I'm saying? You know, I'm a high-level striker. I've been fighting boxing and kickboxing since I was 7 years old. The first thing I ask is, you know, you give me the guy's name. The next question I'm asking is he a southpaw or is he an orthodox? You gotta figure that out because that's starting from the ground up. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like the level of guys that he's been fighting, their striking is not that high of a level yet. That they gotta figure that out. You know, or they're training with southpaws every day like I am. I brought in 3 or 4 different southpaws. I have Darian Caldwell that trains in my gym. That is the exact same body lengthwise as AJ McKee. So he's in my back pocket, and I've been doing great rounds with him and doing a lot of preparation with Darian. So I'm ready for a southpaw. And my best knockouts, if you look at all of my knockouts, they were fighting against a southpaw.
I was going to mention about Darian because I know you put a picture up on your Instagram the other day about training with him. What's the biggest takeaway you take from him? He's a young guy like yourself. He's not been in this game as long as you have. But what do you take from him, a guy that's already become a champion?
You know it's we're neck and neck. We're right there with each other, all of us. Jeremy Stevens, Darian, Miles, Jury. You know, those are some of the best 45-pounders in the world right now. And man, there's some good days and there's some really bad days. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have a good day, you did good. But if you have a bad day, you got your ass kicked. But, you know, being around those guys and a guy like Darian that's already at the top, this solidifies myself. I know I could be there too. You know what I'm saying? I know, you know, I just got to have 1 or 2 good outings. You know what I'm saying? And with Darian, you know, he's like a lion, man. Nothing can hurt that guy. You know, and he's always adapting. He's always trying to be more funky. You know what I'm saying? So those are the little things that I take away from him, you know, and just being there every day and just being consistent, you know, showing up every day outside the gym too. You know, we're like a big family. You know what I'm saying? Darian just fought like 2 or 3 weeks ago and he didn't have to come into the gym. And he came right away the very next Tuesday. He was in the gym giving me looks for AJ McKee. You know what I'm saying? And that means a lot to me. You know what I'm saying? He's like a brother that I've never had, you know, and an older brother I never had. Sorry, I have a younger brother. an older brother I never had, you know, and for those guys to, pay me respect as their younger brother, man, it gives me credit, I feel, you know, and gives me confidence.
Final thing, Justin, I really appreciate the time. Now that Mike Pyle has cut off your mullet, do you feel like you are now the face of mullet in MMA?
Oh, man. I tell you what, there is nothing more American than a mullet. And if you're going to have the name American Kid, you better have a mullet. And let me tell you something. The people that love fighting are rednecks and Hoosiers. And nothing more than rednecks and Hoosiers love mullets than rednecks and Hoosiers. So I'm a redneck too, and I'm a Hoosier. So, hey man, I love my mullet. I get mad props on it. I get people trying to take pictures when I'm standing at Walmart in the checkout line. I look behind me and they're taking pictures of it, you know? So the flow is real on my end.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see that glorious mullet come here on Friday night, April 13th, Bellator 197. Justin Mehta, I really appreciate the time. Of course, let all my listeners know where they can follow you at on social media. And Daniel, there was my conversations with Brandon Gertz, AJ McKee, and Justin Lawrence. Just kind of some thoughts about those interviews. Brandon Gertz, you hear him talking about training with Justin Gaethje there in Colorado of how he makes him a better fighter. AJ McKee, and I brought up the James Gallagher potential fight, and to me that matchup is almost becoming like Paul Daly, Michael Page. Like, he gets talked about so much that it's never going to happen. And then for Justin Lawrence, you're talking about, looking at his life post-fighting, potentially looking at being a fighter, but also mentioned that some of his best knockouts have come against southpaws. So, interesting to kind of see there. But really, the McKee, are you like me on the McKee thing? Like, you feel like the James Gallagher McKee fight was never going to happen?
Man, I feel like, no, it's not going to happen. I guess the thing is, if you're James Gallagher camp, and I don't know if you want to put him in the cage with McKee. And also, if you're McKee's camp, I don't know if you want to put him in the cage with Gallagher. Hey. And if you're Bellator, I don't know if you want to do a good fight. So I don't know if any of those things happen.
Hey, if you're representing James Gallagher, do you want to put him in the cage right now with Adam Borax?
No, I don't want to put – this is what I want to do. I don't want to put Gallagher in the cage with anyone that's good. I want to run out my contract. I want to sign a deal with the UFC. That's honestly my approach. But I would love to see Gallagher and McKee. You think Bellator has Borax under contract?
Oh, yeah, they do.
Oh, they do? Okay. Was this a guy that they had an eye on prior to Gallagher?
He had fought before. But they use him. He's from over there, but he trains down in South Florida. But definitely a featherweight prospect to pay attention to.
Yeah, dude, that was a dynamic win, and that would have been a rough deal had Gallagher received that, been on the receiving end of that flying knee. But yeah, man, I just think. I really want to see Gallagher McKee. I really want to see Paige Daly. I just wish Bellator would listen to us and get these fights happening.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I do want to go back to Conor McGregor real quick. I wanted to mention this listener question that we got coming from Omar, where he said, what is the ideal solution to McGregor? Does the UFC potentially pay more than normally would just to get him a loss? I mean, look, I think the UFC is actually in a great bargaining chip here with Conor McGregor. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like because of the fact of how many millions this is going to cost Conor, that I feel like the UFC is really has a little bit of leverage going into contract negotiation with Conor.
Yeah, I think they certainly have leverage. I don't think what Conor did puts him – I think he loses some leverage, and I think it just comes down to more – it probably comes, if I had to assume, it maybe affects the pay they do up front, maybe not percentage points on pay-per-view, but it's probably the asking price probably drops down just a tad bit, just because, Conor's going to have to start making money at some point because he's got a lot of lawsuits and probably like a lot of future lawsuits. So for the UFC, I think what happened this past weekend is good for them. But don't be silly. Conor, if nothing, is a fierce negotiator, and he's still going to get a whole hell of a lot of money out of them. But if you want to ask me, does he have less levers than he did prior to last week, I think the answer is absolutely yes. But who knows? Maybe Viacom's going to throw a bunch of money at him, and they're going to do the Conor McGregor Ireland special, where they have McGregor, Artem Lobov, Gallagher, and Dylan Danis all on the same fight card.
Dylan Danis going to be fighting at the end of the month.
Yeah, do we just call it? Is Bellator going to become McGregor FC? Is Bellator's best move to give 50% of the company to McGregor and just do McGregor fights every week?
Oh, man. If Conor came on the market, they'd hand him a blank check. We both know that. By the way, speaking of Bellator, I reported last week Mirko Krokop was drug tested by Mike Mazzulli, the Mohegan Tribe, as he went over to Croatia to drug test him, which really the Krokop drug testing really has become very much of a non-topic. But let me get your thoughts on this, Daniel. Let's say Mirko goes out and looks impressive against Roy Nelson. Odds that he ends up being a heavyweight tournament alternate, 60%.
100% alternate. I think if you look at the formula of who is in this tournament, Mirko Krokop is like a carbon copy of what they're looking for. So if he does look good, potentially this is a guy who wins this tournament. I think is he not the first guy you call? If he wins, is he not the first guy you call off your Bellator? And I mean, I hate to be a pessimist, but I don't think you're going to call the winner of Ayala Congo. So
I can't see it being Czech, but if Javi goes out there and puts on a great performance, like knocks him out, I could see him at least being in the conversation. Yeah.
But Krokop definitely is the top pick if he beats Nelson. Dude, he doesn't even have to look good. He doesn't have to look good. He just has to get his hand raised. And I think his name value is enough to warrant being in that tournament. I mean, Bellator. The one fight Bellator wants to make is Krokop versus Fedor. No matter – like if Fedor does lose, you got to do Krokop Fedor. I think that's actually a great fight to do. And it's one where I feel comfortable about both participants because it's almost like they're in that super old division. So, yeah, I'm calling my shot now. Krokop, Fedor. That might just be the finals for the heavyweight tournament, although probably not.
By the way, go ahead.
You know my pick, Ryan Bader. Going to run through it.
You're not the first person who has said that. By the way, speaking of drug testing, this came out on Tuesday. Josh Barnett has filed a lawsuit in Los Angeles Superior Court against a supplement company, I believe it's pronounced Gencor, on the grounds of basically, hey, you cost me a lot of money for a failed drug test. So very interesting to see a fighter going after a supplement company after, of course, he got off, went to arbitration, won arbitration, which is a pretty landmark case when you really think about that, of what happened there. But something interesting to bring up, of course, Brock Lesnar, all signs do point that he's going to fight in the UFC potentially in December. It was announced on Monday that he signed a new contract with WWE, but the length of that contract was not announced, and apparently it does allow for him to fight one fight in the UFC. I guess the rumblings is, and you would know better about this, that apparently he's going to drop his title coming up here later on this month overseas against Roman Reigns. And look, it's potentially the end of 2018 could be a really good year for the UFC if, say, they can have Conor headline November and then have Brock in the main event of the December pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think so, man. By the way, if I'm one of the four employees at Gencor and I know Josh Barnett is mad at me, I'd be so scared. But hopefully he gets his money back. I think Lesnar's a done deal for the UFC. Especially when surely you sign a short-term deal with the WWE, and in this short-term deal, there's provision that you can take a UFC fight. like by gosh. So I think we're going to get one more fight out of Brock Lesnar because I think his performance in his one fight is going to be really bad against the top fighter. Like, I think he's obviously lined up to take on the heavyweight champion, which, Jason, this could be a bad sight for Brock Lesnar. I know this is a guy who has made an MMA career out of doing absurd things that we don't expect, but Stipe Miocic is not Mark Hunt. But if you're the UFC, all you care about is that payoff, and they're going to get it with a Lesnar fight. I mean, there could be momentum, although that momentum will probably be too late because they will have already made that TV deal by then, and that sucks for the UFC. I think they're going to lose a lot of money. Potential money they could have had they had their ducks in a row the past a year and a half. It's going to be too late for their new TV deal.
Nick Diaz is eligible to return next week, as you saw announced on Monday. He comes off they came to an agreement, a 1-year suspension, that he'll come off suspension and next week. I think the biggest thing with Nick is, does Nick want to fight?
Yeah, probably not. He probably doesn't, but he probably will anyway. I think that's the Nick Diaz story. I don't want to fight, but I'll do it anyway. And I think we'll see him fight. Is he still under contract to the UFC?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a guy that, when you're looking for pay-per-view headliners and a non-title fight, you could do it with Nick.
Dude, I would love to see Nick Diaz versus Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, that would be a great one. Mike Perry said he'd be interested in a fight, but I don't see Nick Diaz coming back to fight Mike Perry.
He's coming for a payday. He's coming to fight the champion, honestly. But hopefully there'll be enough interim champions that maybe it's the fourth interim champion he'll take on at the time. But wow, it does seem like, as we talk today, Jason, the ducks are lining in a row for UFC to have a good end of the year, which, it's obvious you can't assume anything. But just remember where we are, guys, where we are in that the past, God, year of this sport has been bad. Year and a half has not been great in terms of business. But remember, if we do come in for a great end of the year, great start to 2019, I think the lesson we should learn is not to overreact to the negatives and the downturns of the cycle, because that may just be what this sport is, a cyclical sport. And whenever the UFC or the sport itself is in a bad spot, in all likelihood, it's eventually going to rebound. So let's kind of do away with the, is the UFC going to be extinct rumors or whatever? But we shall see. Things are setting up nicely towards the end of the year. But obviously, if there's anything we learned over the past year and a half is that things that look good on paper don't happen because George Lockhart doesn't know how to cut weight. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, George Lockhart. I'm sure you're one of the best in the game. But poor Max Holloway. Poor guy. I wonder if he ate a lot of food this weekend.
Oh, I'm sure he probably did. Final thing to mention here on this week's podcast. It was announced on Tuesday that a rematch between Patricio Pitbull and Daniel Vichel is going to headline Bellator 203 on Saturday, July the 14th, and in Rome, Italy. And I was like, I get the press release. I'm like, oh, cool. That should not be a international event that's tape delay. Oh, yeah, it's going to be tape delay. And then I just happened to look. Oh, yeah, the UFC's got a fight night card that night on FS1. And these, like, I don't get why people at Paramount Network think it's a good idea to tape delay a show on a Saturday and go up against a live UFC fight card.
Yeah, I think, Jason, this is like a combination of multiple mistakes. We have the basic mistake at the tape delay combined with going head-to-head with the UFC, and you aren't going to win the head-to-head battle. This is an absolute shame. Scott Coker doesn't want this, but still.
And it's the middle of July. There is nothing going on in sports in the middle of July. I've always said this. Like, when I was working in terrestrial radio, the worst week you would hate for them to ask you to fill in was the middle of July, particularly the week of the MLB All-Star game, because there is nothing going on in sports.
They should just run a card on Wednesday.
Just do the UFC did that. Man, this was probably 5-6 years ago. They did a Wednesday afternoon card in somewhere in California. I remember, I want to say Weidman Munoz was the main event, and literally no one was there because the card started at like 3:00 local time.
Okay, yeah, don't do that. Never mind. I remember that card. That was a bad night for Mark Munoz.
Don't worry. You got a PFL going to start June the 7th.
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait.
Thursday night fight card. Good luck. And I've heard they're going to Miami for one of their shows. And I'm just like, man, good luck. If you're trying to go
somewhere where people don't go to school, like Alabama. What's up, Alabama? What's up, Nick Saban?
The problem is, if you're starting your prelims at like 6 or 7 o'clock, you might have a tough time getting people there.
Yeah, people are at work. People are at school. I mean, it's rush hour in every big city, and really every city. You're right. That is, and 6 is kind of late for the prelims, to be completely honest with you. Well, I guess it depends what kind of event you're running.
I think they're not starting the main card till like 10:00 at night.
Man.
Which the other part about that is, if someone's got to be at work early Friday morning, do they want to be at an event till midnight plus?
Yeah, that's gonna be a really tough draw. I mean, it's almost like you should run. The thing is, when you chart, that's tough. It's almost like you should run a 2-hour event or a 3-hour event, 7 to 10, and just it's just not a long fight card. You got 6 fights.
How do you make money that way, though?
I know you're right. You gotta hope you draw crowds. Draw a crowd is what I would say.
Look, PFL is, they're going to have to make money based on local ticket sellers.
Yeah, you're right.
You look at their roster. Let's just say Miami, for instance. Well, if you put a Jake Shields on a fight card in Miami, is he going to fill the arena? No.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just a tough position. I mean, look, I hope that the PFL succeeds, but man, but it's kind of crazy. We're here at the beginning of April. They still haven't officially announced event that's 2 months away.
And they're supposed to be running every week, aren't they? Are they not?
Yeah. I mean, the way they have not officially come out with the rules, but I think it looks like they want to have guys fight 4 or 5 times in about 6 months. Good luck.
Would you, Yeah, good luck. Guys would theoretically love that, and I'm sure when they get pitched that idea, it's like, hell yeah, but there's a reason the only guy that does it is Tony Lopez. It's tough. Did Tony Lopez fight this week?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Oh, they got to check. You got to check, Jason. Oh, I'm going to look. I'm going to look. Tony, I'm pretty sure he didn't, but let's check a kryptonite, you know, fought. He's 60-28. Was that his record last week?
Yeah, his next fight, they say it's not till June per Tapology, but you got to imagine he's trying to get a fight here next week or so.
I don't believe he's fighting until June, man. There's got to be another Alaska FC event in between that, and he's got to defend his title.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, it is crazy. Yeah, maybe you just book Tony Lopez every week if you're PFL.
maybe. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which, of course, you hear every week on RadioInfluence.com. Also available Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Latest rumors going on around the league regarding the top picks. Look, the Browns have done their due diligence. Do I have a sense, knowing John Dorsey, knowing that staff, who they would take? Yes. Do I know? No. You know, when people say things like, well, the Browns are going to interview every quarterback because they wanted to going to disguise what they're doing. No, what they're doing is meeting with every quarterback to really compare and contrast everything about every one of these guys, to make sure that they're making the right decision. And in the process of doing that, if it causes some clouds and some consternation and some question about what they're going to do, and maybe clouds who might be there, you know, and what they might do it for, absolutely.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.